This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown.
More on the many vigils across Texas yesterday and ongoing reaction. But first, the issue foremost on the minds of policymakers this hour, an issue of domestic security. Paul Miller is Associate Director of the Clemens Center for National Security at the University of Texas at Austin. Professor, welcome to the Standard.
Thanks for having me on.
According to reports, the gunman in Orlando, Omar Mateen, had been questioned by the FBI twice, 2013, 2014, but he wasn't on their watch list. How does that happen, that the FBI interviews the same person twice, but that doesn't trigger anything more?
Well, the internal processes of the FBI are pretty opaque, and I'm not convinced that they are very consistent from case to case either. The FBI, of course, handles a very large caseload. They go through these things all the time. They can't afford to put everyone on the watch list. And the watch list itself has been the subject of some controversy. Some people have questioned the legality of depriving people of the right to fly or bear arms just on the basis of the FBI's suspicion. So I'm not surprised that they miss a case now and then. They don't have a distinguished track record in their counterterrorism efforts, and they clearly need some reform.
You say clearly need some reform. In what sense? Do systems need to be regularized, or what are you suggesting?
Well, for example, in the United Kingdom, they have the MI5. They have a domestic intelligence and internal security agency. That might be a good idea for us to move towards. The FBI is a law enforcement organization. They were founded with the purpose of catching criminals after the fact. And so they're not well equipped. They don't have the organizational culture to prevent terrorism before the fact. And as we've seen from recent history, they don't have a very good track record of preventing terrorism. So we may need to move towards a whole different organizational structure for internal security.
I want to go back to something that you mentioned just a little bit earlier. You mentioned that even if Omar Mateen were placed on an FBI terror watch list, that would have stopped him from getting on a plane. I'm not sure if it would have stopped him, though, from obtaining a firearm, because isn't that constitutionally protected unless he's, actually convicted of a felony?
That's right. I mean, some people have raised this concern about the watch list itself. Can we deprive people of the right to plane travel, if there is such a right, just on the basis of suspicion? If we can't do that for firearms, why can we do it for plane travel? So the whole idea of a watch list is a bit contentious. I think, yes, the government should have the ability to put some reasonable restrictions on those suspected of links to terrorism. But clearly, the organizational process in place to do that is not working well.
It seems like the whole notion of a watch list means that you are either being scrutinized, or are people being scrutinized who are on the watch list? That is to say, it seems as a practical matter, the way this watch list is used is when an individual on that list seeks to travel. That they're not necessarily on anyone's radar screen beyond the fact that they've been put on this list.
And it seems to make more sense to me if there are folks who are suspected of ties to terrorist groups or known to have ties, that an agency of the government should keep an active surveillance on that person to gain more intelligence about the network they're tied into. I don't know that just banning them from flying is the best way to protect our national security.
There's a lot of talk about being tough on terror, but this, of course, was an American citizen. I mean, he pledged in a 911 call during the attack allegiance to ISIS, a self-proclaimed Islamic State. But it's still not known whether he actually had any communication with anyone from ISIS. Is this whole thing complicated by the fact that he was an American citizen?
Well, we've seen before cases of sort of these lone wolf attacks or self-radicalization. I don't know if this guy had ever met somebody from ISIS. In previous cases, we've seen maybe he had an email exchange with somebody, or maybe he made one trip to the region for some preliminary training. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if we found some level of kind of low-level ties between him and ISIS or another group. But even if not, it is possible that he's a true lone wolf, that is self-radicalized. And that's a terrifying thing to contemplate, that even our fellow citizens are capable of doing this on their own.
Paul Miller, Associate Director of the Clemens Center for National Security at the University of Texas at Austin. Professor, thank you very much.
You're welcome.